maybe take us back to your pre-Kemp days when you were a teacher in the Houston Public Schools. So what are some of the problems that you saw that you thought you could tackle if you had the control over the program?
Well, going back to those days, we recognized the need to do more with our students, have kids come before the day that they started, keep them after school, have them come on weekends. And there would be school rules in place that kids weren't allowed up into the classroom until a certain time in the morning. We were kicked out of the building in the afternoon. We would try to do things on Saturdays, and almost half the time the building would be locked. You'd have to just basically find shade under a tree and keep there. It was very frustrating. Realize that we just, as teachers, we wanted to do more with our kids, and there were just individuals or just bureaucratic rules in place that seemed to prevent common sense from doing what's right with children. We were watching our former students go up to middle school and fail, and at first we fell into the trap of doing a lot of finger pointing and blaming the other schools and the district and the kids and the parents and the community and everyone else. And we had an epiphany in late 93 that all that finger pointing wasn't doing anything to contribute to solutions, it was just adding to the problem. And as soon as we had that epiphany, we realized we had to point the finger actually at ourselves and put the problem within our sphere of influence to do something about. And so that was the night we looked in the mirror at ourselves, realized we were the problem. That was the night we stayed up all night long, put on YouTube, Hot Tub Baby, repeat play. And by about 5 o'clock in the morning, we had the Knowledge is Power program, KIPP, on our computer screen. And the premise of KIPP back then is that today there are no shortcuts to helping our kids achieve success in school and in life. And we started the program in 94 and became a school in 95.
And now, of course, you have schools in many states, and you especially have sort of a stronghold here in Texas. Can you talk about sort of, why has KIPP managed to really flourish in this state in particular?
I think it's a convergence of a couple different factors. One, I think this is KIPP's birthplace. This is where we've been around the longest and have the most time to start to grow and expand, and simply where word got out. In Houston alone, we have we had 4,500 kids and parents sign up for our lottery last year. Even with our crazy hyper growth in Houston, which is the most anywhere in the country, still accommodate about a quarter of those kids and families. So I think that's part of it. I think Texas, in a lot of levels, is very fertile ground for just education reform in general, and especially entrepreneurship to happen in education too. And so that's whether it's, we're talking Houston, San Antonio, Austin, Dallas, the Valley. I think that and it's not just KIPP. There's lots of people doing interesting things. I think just because there's something in the Texan DNA for entrepreneurship to happen. And I think that our policy leaders, while there's still a lot we can do to make it even better, there's been enough of an emphasis on support for new ideas to actually turn into action. To make KIPP and other things like KIPP grow.
When you say other things, I assume you mean maybe like Yes Prep. Is it mostly charter schools that are doing this sort of thing?
We can definitely point to Yes Prep, and we can point to Uplift Dallas and the Idea Schools of the Valley as a starting point, but even within the school district, I think you've got Michael Hinojosa, superintendent in Dallas, who did interesting things when he was superintendent down here in Houston Springs. He's reaching out to try to partner with the charters. Terry Greer in Houston with the Apollo 20, while, again, different people can debate and argue what parts of it are good or bad. At least, at a basic level, see people trying new and different things, admitting that there's a problem and we need to get better, and not burying their head in the sand. Danny King, superintendent Far Alamo School District in the Valley. I mean, you got Duncan Klusman and Spring Branch. There's lots of people that are examples of, whether we're talking charter or traditional districts, people aren't afraid to experiment and try new things, admit that we're not doing as much as we can, we should do better, and they're trying to do things about it, and I think that's terrific.
You know, are charter schools the answer to education? From what you just said, it sounds like maybe it's more about mindset.
Mindset is our biggest problem, I think, right now, and mindset is going to be our biggest solution. The premise in charter, the answer, is baloney. There's nothing inherent about a charter school that makes it great or that makes it bad. What a charter school represents is an opportunity. That's it. And where great people take advantage of a great opportunity, great things are going to happen. And when crooks take advantage of an opportunity, fraudulent things are going to happen. There's nothing good or bad about a charter. It's the people who receive the charter, what they do with it. And there's lots of examples of excellent charters out there. And there's also, unfortunately, examples of low-performing, horrible charters out there. And the one premise of charter schools is supposed to be that the good ones flourish and the bad ones go away. And I'd like to see our policy leaders do more to do both. Let the good ones flourish, make the bad ones go away. In terms of mindset, again, we can talk about, charter school policy that needs to be updated, facility issues, school finance issues, textbook issues, curriculum standards. Those are all issues. But to me, the number one challenge we face right now is belief and mindset. And the fact that collectively, as society, we still do not believe that any child from any zip code can succeed in school and can succeed in life as well as any other child from any other zip code. I think we live in a PC world where we don't talk about it openly, but I've been to enough conferences, I've talked to enough people, to realize in the heart of hearts, people don't yet truly believe. And I think that's we have to get past the notion of saying all children can learn. That's really nice, that's kind of fluffy. And we have to have the mindset that if all children can learn, therefore it's up to us, the adults, to make sure that all children will learn. And I think that is the missing element right now that we face both in Texas and actually around the country.
And so what do you sort of, I think you're free to do some things in the charter school that other public schools aren't. So how does that mindset sort of manifest itself in a KIPP school?
Well, I wish that was the case. After the last few legislative sessions, there have been enough changes where there's not really that much more any freedoms that charters have that districts simply cannot do at all. I was thinking about examples of this one, of what, we have a longer school day, a week in a year. Districts could do that if they so choose. We have all of our, we don't do teacher contracts. Everyone's at will, including myself. Again, if the district, I think, chose to go that route, there are ways for them to do that. It's a matter of political will. Some of these things are very difficult choices, but I think a district could do all of these things.
And that sort of gets to the issue of scalability, right? One of the things people ask is, is this just an anomaly, or is sort of the system that some of these schools that are doing really well, scalable to a larger scale like, the state of Texas?
Right. You look at the very basic ingredients of why KIPP works, is great teaching and more of it. Is that scalable? I believe so. I think we absolutely have to, in Texas and as a society, believe that it's possible. Now, the brutal fact is, do we have enough great teachers for every single one of our classrooms today across Texas? The brutal fact answer is no. So there's no reason why we can't. you go a step further back and beyond Greek teaching more of it, what's the basic framework? It's more time on task, having a longer day, week, and year. That's scalable.
Again, it's how we choose
to allocate our precious resources, but any district in Texas can choose to have a longer day, week, and year, depending on how it allocates its budget dollars.
It's choice and commitment. The fact that parents or the teachers choose the school and choose to make commitments to each other. And again, there are districts that are already kind of becoming choice districts anyway. A district it's not in any legal rule that you have to have boundaries around any school and only people in a certain neighborhood can go to that school. A school district can have open enrollment inside of its boundaries. The power to lead, the fact that school leaders have control over staff and budget, again, that's something that any school board tomorrow could say that, you know what, a majority of our budget dollars, we're going to let our principals allocate those dollars. And we're going to give the principals the ability to truly decide who's teaching their buildings and who's not teaching their buildings. We're not taking away anything like due process, but everyone has a boss. Those bosses can, at the end of the day, should be able to decide if we're doing a good job or if we need to be replaced. High expectations. We can choose, any school district in Texas can choose to focus on barely passing the tax test or preparing our kids to be ready to go to and through college. And then the last pillar is great results, which are measurable. Again, we set our bars. The district can decide to be happy and let confetti fall from the ceiling just because kids pass the tax test, or we can decide to wait on that confetti until we truly see the kids are college ready. So there's nothing about KIPP that isn't scalable. It's just a matter of, I think, we need proof points, we need to get people to believe, and then we need some very courageous leaders in the classroom level, the school level, the superintendent level, and the school board level to put in place these sorts of reforms to set everyone up for success.
So, one of the sort of more heartbreaking moments in the Waiting for Superman movie is when you see these kids hoping to get a better education, and it sort of comes down to just luck of the draw. Do you foresee a time when sort of that access to that caliber of education is maybe more available, or when we don't have to rely on these sorts of lottery systems anymore?
I hope so. I mean, that's what we're working towards. I mean, our theory of change at KIPP is that we want to have the same impact on the public education system the way FedEx impacted the post office, which is, I like to use that analogy because, one, it shows that we are, at KIPP, we are not planning, nor do we think, that we're going to be able to educate all the children, or even the majority of the children, but we feel like we can find a tipping point where that if we get to a certain size and if we continue to do a great job, educating our children, that will have a positive impact on the rest of the school system where majority of the other kids are going to be. Or the other way we look at it is the only way we will ever catch up to our 4,500 kid wait list that continues to grow every year is if the other schools get better so the kids and parents stop wanting to come. And that's what we're trying to do. I think we already see signs of that in Houston, where KIPP and YES have 10,000 kids now, and probably about 8,000 of those kids are live in Houston ISD, we have about 4% market share. So it's not that 10% tipping point yet, but you're already starting to see Houston ISD behave in ways where a government monopoly normally does not behave. They're actively recruiting our school leaders. They're getting rid of low-performing principals, low-performing teachers. They're expanding the school day. They're starting to view the kids and parents as their customers who they need to be accountable to, not just to the state and federal government, but to the kids and parents. And they're marketing their schools to the kids and parents so they choose to go with them. And I think, monopolies don't behave that way, so we're always starting to see behavior change. And I think as KIPP and YES continues to grow until we find that equilibrium, we grow to the point where we stop having a wait list because the other schools are getting better, we're going to see more and more of that type of reform happen, and I hope we start to see that in other school districts across Texas as well.
Can this model really work for any kid, you know, they have to go to work, to school for long days. Their parents have to be willing to go through this lottery process and sort of take the initiative there. You know, can any kid sort of get into this, or is it really just for motivated kids with supportive families?
First off, remember, the last thing I want to do is make KIPP the monopoly single choice for all kids and families. So, no, I don't think that the specific way we've set up our model of school is for all the children and all the parents. However, in general, the idea of having no excuses, high expectations, partner with the parents and the kids approach to education, can that work for all kids and parents? I absolutely believe so. And for the people who think that, you know, this only works for what KIPP is doing, only works for rock star kids and rock star parents, you know, I have answer coming from my heart and answer coming from my head. The answer from my head is we're letting Mathematica do a long term study on our wait list. So if there really is something extra special about the kids and parents who want to come to KIPP, then something extra special is on our wait list. So long term, we're tracking the kids who get into KIPP and who don't get into KIPP, and we'll see if there's a difference. Although my heart of hearts response to people who think that is, I'm just wondering, what percent of children and parents in any community do we think cares about education, values education, and wants a brighter future? Do we think it's 5%, 10%, 30%, 50%, 90%, 99%? I'm very, you know, inherent in that question, my worry is that people think that it's somewhere in the 5, 10, or 20% range where, you know, where unfortunately people think a kid in an underserved community or a parent in an underserved community who loves their children and wants the best for their children is something rare. And I believe that also is baloney. I think a vast majority of kids and parents want a great education and want a future.
You know, in the movie, teachers' unions sort of come out as the villains, and I was wondering if that was fair and if there may be some other barriers to turning around the education system in this state and this country.
You know, if we want to start handing out prizes for who are the villains that have created the situation we're in with public education, we would quickly run out of prizes. I mean, everyone gets to blame. Everyone. And that does include the unions. But by no means do the unions create the problem. You know, districts create the problem, school boards create the problem, the textbooks publishers create the problem, the teachers have created the problem, the parents have created the problem, the children have created the problem, the legislators have created the problem. It goes on and on and on. I mean, so we that's the thing. We need to get out of the finger pointing. I mean, it might be an interesting debate for some cocktail party to try to figure out who gets most of the problem. I'm more focused on the solution. And what I know is that regardless of how we got into the mess we found ourselves, the solution are great teachers, which again is, I think, is the premise of that movie. That a great teacher has the potential to overcome all those other problems and make great things happen for the kids. And that's what we should focus on. And from a union perspective, there are union leaders, I think, who recognize that, who do support ed reform efforts to make it easier for great teachers to do great teaching so students do great learning. There are union leaders who are more obstructionist, who do not want that to happen. Again, you know, but the same thing again. There's great charters and bad charters. There's great teachers and bad teachers. There's great superintendents and bad superintendents. There's great school board members and bad school board members. And there are great union leaders and horrible union leaders. And I think we run into trouble every time we try to paint any one group with either they're to blame for the entire problem or they're all good or all bad. That's why I think we run into problems. I think what the movie does highlight is that, yes, that there definitely have been some general union policies that are getting, unfortunately, getting in the way of making progress instead of supporting the progress.
And so if this emphasis on, you know, if a teacher is in a school that isn't keeping the kids until 4:30 or 5 or doesn't make them come in on Saturdays, is it still, can they still sort of take away something from this, from looking at you guys or looking at other success stories or looking at this movie and see something they can do in their classroom or with their kids?
Yeah. Well, you know, inherent in the more time, there's something deeper than just adding time to the clock. But also, let's remember, if we add time to bad instruction, that's not going to lead to anything good. So it's not just the more time. I think if you dig into more time, what we find and what is there for any teacher in any school across Texas is a sense of urgency and a respect for how every second can be a precious learning opportunity. And so even if we don't keep the kids till 5, I'd ask any school faculty to look at the schedule and think, are we maximizing the time on task? Are we squeezing learning opportunities out of our school day? Or are we having kids waste time in silly things like waiting in bathroom lines and waiting in cafeteria lines, sitting in the gym before school starts, not offering opportunities for to continue after school? So there are things that any school could do just simply to evaluate a sense of urgency in the school day. Although, with that said, I will still argue that it is very hard for any school or district to achieve all of the goals we need to achieve with 4 to 5 hours of instruction a day for less than half the year, which is when you take out lunch and recess and bathroom breaks, you take teacher professional development days, it's really what we have. We have 4 to 5 hours of instruction a day for less than half the year. At that amount of time on the clock, we're not asking anyone to be great. We're asking them to be miracle workers. And so while there certainly is the sense of urgency should happen and we should make sure we're maximizing our learning opportunities, somehow, some way, we do need to extend learning time. Not necessarily for every single kid. You know, there are children who are doing just fine. They don't need more learning time, but a lot of those children are also, they're getting other types of learning opportunities on their own in their communities and families. They're doing Boy Scouts, they're doing piano lessons, they're on a swim team. Those all are learning opportunities. But for a lot of our children that don't get those opportunities, we need to do something to fill that time so they're not just wandering the streets or, you know, playing Nintendo or watching reruns of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air every afternoon.
How much bigger do you guys plan on getting in Texas?
Yeah. Well, again, we're chasing that tipping point. I mean, right now, like I said, we had 4,500 kids on the wait list. After we were able to, you know, give kids seats in our schools, we still had about 3,400 kids on the wait list, which tells me that we need to keep growing. We don't do public lotteries because I can't stand the thought of doing that kind of public humiliation to families that we saw in the movie. But, you know, I know that there's 3,400 names which have 3,400 stories, which every one of them are heartbreaking. And that I think about that when I close my eyes and go to sleep every night. And that's why we need to grow in Houston, why we need to grow in Austin and Dallas and San Antonio where we are, why other counter operators need to grow in other school districts across Texas. And so I think we find that tipping point where we do not have a majority of the kids, but we have helped push the rest of the school system to the point where everyone is getting a great education, everyone feels that they're at the school that they want to be at, which frankly should be, I think that is a public, unalienable right that we should have in the state of this country.